spells are here for my keeping. Stand Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. How I pray for a week, STC, God bless them dead. I lie.
That's Ange Hardy with the title track from her new album, STC. It's an album inspired by the life and work of English romantic poet Samuel Taylor Coleridge, the STC in the title. And Ange is our special guest on Folk Roots Radio today, all the way from Somerset, England in the UK. How are you doing today, Ange?
I'm good, thank you. Really happy to be here.
Well, I'm pleased to be able to do this interview today. I received my copy of the album a few weeks ago in the mail, and what can I tell you? I absolutely love it. It's a fabulous album. Thanks. And I'll be honest, as somebody who at school, and I'm going to have to say this, I was forced to read the poems of of Coleridge, and I don't remember it as being something that I was enthralled with. I did love The Rime of the Ancient Mariner. Let's be honest, I did love that, and I was able to recite it because elocution lessons were a big part of my childhood, much to my chagrin at the time, let's be honest. But now, what can I tell you? I do love the fact that I was sent to elocution. But I really didn't connect with Coleridge until I received your album. What can I tell you? The real voyage of discovery is having new eyes, and I really do feel like it's certainly opened up my eyes to what a great poet Coleridge was, what a very interesting man, and I'm so pleased that you decided to use that for the inspiration for the album. So with that preamble, I'm going to get you to tell us why you created this album based around the life of Coleridge.
Well, the reason that Coleridge became the subject is that I live in a little village in Somerset near the coast called Samford Brett. And it's one of 14 villages that a particular walk called the Coleridge Way, or named the Coleridge Way now, goes through right past my front door. So it goes from Nether Stowey, where he had a little house and used to go for walks with Dorothy and Wordsworth, or along the Exmoor and Quantox, and down through the valleys, right past our front door, and down to Linton Limber on the coast. And so when we were thinking about different projects we could do, my husband suggested Coleridge. Well, I left school at 13, and I'm not at all well-educated. I have no GCSEs or anything. And when he said Coleridge, I actually just asked, what is Coleridge? Not even who. I had no idea. So I read some poetry, but I didn't start with The Rime of the Ancient Mariner or Kubla Khan or any of the famous ones. I just started at the beginning of a book that I happened to pick up with a song called The Foster Mother's Tale. And obviously it's a poem that he had written, which was an extract of a play, told a brilliant folky story. And immediately I connected with Coleridge through that. And I also immediately decided upon reading that book that I needed to know Coleridge as a man rather than just his poetry. Once you get into his mind and understand a bit more about Coleridge and his background and drawing parallels with his life and my own, it became a lot more meaty and a lot more interesting, and it brought the poetry to life.
It's interesting you say that, because I was reflecting on that as I'm listening to the album, reading the wonderful liner notes that you have produced for what is a beautifully packaged album. And, you know, we live in this world where I think just today I was reading that CD sales have dropped another 35%. But when you get that album that is lovingly put together, that has fabulous liner notes, that tells a story about why you created this, but you really did bring it to life. And it's interesting you say that The Foster Mother's Tale has this wonderful folky story that makes it a natural for folk song. Because, again, if I thought about my own experience in English literature, it was a trial to do this. Even though, you know, poetry like The Rime of the Ancient Mariner, you know, it had so much blood and gore in it, this idea of people dying at sea because, you know, there wasn't anything to eat or drink, was all fairly shocking. I'm fascinated by the fact that you say that you feel like your own education was lacking, and yet what you've done by creating this album is suddenly exposed me to this wonderful world of romantic poets that at the time I may not have thought about paying any attention to, which I think does speak a little bit to the, dare I say, not just the English or the British education system, but probably a lot of the way that we tend to teach kids, you know, that I don't think we inspire them to use their imagination, which, again, just makes it wonderful that you chose to do this.
It's been great watching my own children enjoy the project and listen to the project. And no sooner did we start doing, you know, I was studying Coleridge, my daughter started studying it at school. And she said, oh, Mum, can I take some of your samples into school? And she ended up giving the whole album to her teacher, who used it as a teaching resource, which was great. But my daughter's 12, she's highly dyslexic, she really struggles with learning, and when she first heard Kubla Khan, she just didn't even blink an eye. And then we started playing the version on the album, and obviously there's all emphasis put on things like fast, thick pants were breathing, and she found that hilarious. She's now able to recite the entire poem by heart, just from listening to the song and enjoying the little parts that make people smile, or, you know, it's been a great resource for her. The other thing that I think is really important is that Coleridge was right at the heart of the beginning of the Romantic movement. And when he was writing poetry, only the scholars and the priests and the educated men were allowed to comment on poetry. And he wanted poetry to be accessible to everybody, which is why it was so important that, from a non-educated point of view, little old me that could barely really read that well, to go on to study his poetry and have a point of view on it that comes from a blank canvas. I've not been taught how to understand The Ancient Mariner. I've taken my own interpretation of it, and I want it to be accessible through my music to other people who aren't necessarily just educated or that just like poetry, and maybe to bring poetry to new people, bring new people to Somerset as well, which is really important. And so far, so good.
Well, I certainly think that, to use a North American metaphor, you've definitely hit this one out of the park as far as bringing people to Somerset. There's absolutely no doubt about that, that anyone that picks up this album and listens to it will be intrigued to learn more about that beautiful area of England. I'm curious about the funding for this, though. Trying to work out the way to get something done sometimes can be a huge challenge. Now, you do live in the part of the country where, Coleridge is celebrated. There is the Coleridge Way that we'll talk a little bit about as we get to the end of this interview today. But that doesn't mean it isn't tricky to get it done. Did you find that actually getting the funding to bring this together, to bring all of the people you wanted to play on this album in, did that work out okay for you?
The songwriting process, I actually ended up getting Arts Council funding from the National Arts Lottery. So I got funded to write the 14 tracks and to research Coleridge and then to tour those 14 tracks along the 14 villages of the Coleridge Way. So I got funded for that. The CD itself is self-funded, and that's been off the back of the last couple of years, really, of working. So I'm very lucky that there are lots of incredibly talented people that I know that have been willing to come and be a part of the project. But pulling the whole budget together it's been no expense spared. We've really thrown everything at it. It's not easy to construct something this complicated. I have to say, I'm quite tired. I'm ready for my tour to be over, and it's not started yet. But it's good. It's been a really, really interesting journey, and something on such a huge level. You know, all my other albums have been, I think the last one we spent was £5,000, and you know, this whole project has been £25,000-£26,000 project. It's been huge. So it is, you know, eggs all in one basket, but it is paying off. So
let's take a break for a song from the album. I'd like to pick something. I'll be honest, I could pick any of the 14 tracks to play today, but I'd like to play the song My Captain, which is, I think, about Coleridge, but also about the story of the Ancient Mariner as well, and his life. Can you talk about that song?
Yeah, well, again, it's very instinctive to read The Ancient Mariner, and as it was taught in school, to look at it from the wedding guest point of view, or to concentrate on the albatross, or to concentrate on the bloodbath. Whereas actually, for me, those first few lines spoke hugely of Coleridge's personality. The ship was cheered and off they went. You know, the sun came up and it went down again. It was beautiful. The masts were drawn, and he gets excited about this ship leaving harbour, this mission that they're going on. And although fate has already been drawn, at that point, they're just a bunch of merry men going on a ship, on a jaunt together. You know, the rum's been loaded. That enthusiasm at the beginning of a project is Coleridge all over, and much like Coleridge in general, he quite often doesn't finish things. But I just wanted to capture that excitement of leaving the docks.
Let's play that just now. This is Ange Hardy from her wonderful new album Ecstasy and My Captain, and you're listening to Folk Roots Radio, and I'm Jan Hall.
My captain, you will never be free, for the call of the water binds you. Take my liege and go with speed, and hope good fortunes find you. Up the mast and up the sails, and down to the captain's quarters. Down the rum and talk of home, but never are the captain's daughters. My captain, you will never be free, for the winds control and guide you. The ice and mist can shape and twist the tail you leave behind you. So up the mast and up the sails, and down to the captain's quarters. Down the rum and talk of home, never are the captain's daughters. My captain, you will never be free, although the blood sun guises. For all your 4 times 50 men can't change the way she rises.
up the mast and up the stairs and down to the captain's quarters, down the run and talk of home, but never are the captain's daughters. My liege and go with speed and hope that fortunes find you. Up the mast and up the sails and down to the captain's quarters. Down the rum and talk of home, but never are the captain's daughters. Up the mast and up the sails and down to the captain's quarters. Down the rum and talk of home, but never are the captain's daughters. So up the mast and up the sails, down to the captain's quarters. Down the rum and talk of home, but never are the captain's daughters.
That's Ange Hardy with My Captain from her wonderful album, STC. Ange is our special guest on Folk Roots Radio today. It is truly a fabulous album. I can't wait to see what happens in the future. It's interesting that before the break, you talked about the fact that, you know, you're almost feeling exhausted by everything that's come to this point. We're going to talk a little bit about the tour a little later, but I want to talk about the people that play on this album, because one of the things I do love is the voices that you've brought in. In a few moments, we'll actually play a piece that has some poetry in it that really adds to the feel of the album. And one of the things I love is the way that this album really comes to life. I mean, I start to feel the characters in it. I start yes. to see them. I mean, you really do. They're actually, you know, coming to life in front of your eyes as you listen to the music. So tell me a little bit about the people that came together with you on this album and helped you create this wonderful, wonderful Coleridge world.
Well, there are several people. The poetry that you're about to hear, that's by David Milton. Now, he was a fabulous find. We live, the little village that we live in is just outside a town called Watchet. Now, Watchet is where the Ancient Mariner was inspired, and there's a statue of the Ancient Mariner with the albatross there, and it's said that a lot of it was written in the Bell Pub there. So we got the Watchet town crier to come in and read some of the poetry, and that's the voice that you hear. You know, he has this fabulous, he's a folky at heart as well, which is really good. He sings traditional the Watchet Sailor, all that kind of gruff folky songs, and so he was a perfect choice, and he really, really captured the essence of what I wanted to capture. I tried to take the section of the Ancient Mariner that I had read at the beginning of the Curse of a Dead Man's Eye, and write my own poetry for the song you're about to hear that is inspired by the feel of that. And so the two hopefully connect, because he reads them in a similar way from a similar place. Another person who's on the album is Tamsin Rosewell. She's a historian who runs a folk program. Very different, because she's a historian, she tends to look at the history of the songs or where they were written or how they were written. I went to do a concert near her, and it was just when my husband had already said, let's do Coleridge, and we were thinking about it, but we hadn't made the application. We went to do this concert in a bookshop, and she wanted to dress the stage, so she picked a book. This was a secondhand bookshop with thousands of books, and she picked Coleridge, Poetry and Prose, and put it on the shelf behind me. To which, of course, I was just like, oh, that's amazing. We've got to put this application in. That's my sign. And then I got talking to her about Kubla Khan and said, I really want to do it, but I don't feel I can mess with this poem. What I want to do is capture that song of the damsel with the dulcimer and get someone to read over the top of it. And she said, oh, I love Kubla Khan. I know it by heart. I learnt it when I was 11. And I said, right, that's it. You're reading it for me. So it was immediately obvious. And the whole album's done that. Every time I've needed someone, someone's been sent. And then when we were talking about male vocalists to do the part of Coleridge, and I said, what I really want is a nice, gruff, kind of full man's voice, a proper, good English, a little bit of kind of Somerset accent. And I said, oh, what I really want is someone like Steve Knightley of Show of Hands, kind of jokingly, because at that point in my career, and which, you know, we're not going very far back, he was completely out of reach for me. But you know what? If you don't ask, you don't get. Or shy burns getting out, as they say up north. So I sent him an email, and he was fascinated by the album and joined the team. So it has just really all come together exactly how, well, better than I could have imagined. And each voice has almost been found for me. So, yeah.
It's absolutely fabulous. Now, the track we're going to play is Might Is in the Mind, which is an interesting track. It's not really based on its poetry. And the thing that I found fascinating was the fact that it's actually based on his dinner time conversation, which, you know, next time I'm picking those four people I want to have dinner with, I will probably add Coleridge in, because it's a wonderful story. And it really does sort of evoke that idea of these people sitting around this table. And he's regaling them with stories that, you know, whether they're all true or whether he's making them up, it makes you want to be there to hear what's being talked about. Can you talk about that song and what it means to you?
Yeah. Oh, it was just a story that I thought was fabulous. Again, shows a little bit of his personality. He was a real entertainer at heart. He loved people listening to him. He was a talker. And he would, when he spoke, and it's recounted many times that when he spoke, people were just enthralled. They would just hang on his every word. So you can just imagine him sitting at this table telling this story. And the story is that back in the old biblical times, if you were told about a ghost or a ghoulie or anything like that, you would be scared. You would actually be scared. But we've become desensitized over the years. And so people aren't so sensitive anymore. They laugh about ghosts because they don't believe in them. And so he goes on to tell this story about a young man in university whose best friend plays a trick on him. And in doing so, manages to convince him that ghosts are alive. And the minute that he actually believes it, that's when he convulses and falls to the floor and dies. And he's saying might is very much in the mind.
It's wonderfully evocative. I absolutely love this. The interesting thing is I felt that this song was a little different. There was a bit more of an edge. I mean, whenever I'm picking tracks for a show, I really like to mix it up, but mix it up in a way that actually keeps some sort of thread. But there's always that feeling like, you know, I'm trying to pick that person that may be listening that maybe shies away from the idea of anything that could be at all traditional. And this one, I feel, with the vocals on it, really kind of moves in a different direction. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, it's one of the things I try to do the most. I want an album to be a journey. So each song has to tell its own little story. But I think the album as a whole needs to tell a story. And it needs to take you to places. It needs to have a dynamic. And so putting this song in was really a no-brainer for me, and making it a little bit different and stand out. But like you say, still with the thread that connects it all. I think it's an important part of an album is to not be monotone, to make sure that you swell it in places and change it up and keep it interesting. I think, again, this story is an interesting one, and therefore it needed to be a slightly interesting, slightly quirky sounding track.
And I think all the vocals are by yourself, right? I don't think, is there anyone else on this apart from you?
No, just myself and Patsy Reed, a Scottish fiddler who joined me, who was not particularly sure about what I was telling her to do. I said, I want you to chug on your violin, you know, a nice kind of gritty chug 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 chug. And she went, oh, I don't know. But when we got going, you know, it just fell together again, you know. I think it sounds brilliant what she did with it.
Let's listen to that now. Might Is in the Mind from Ange Hardy from a fabulous new album, Ecstasy. And you're listening to Folk Roots Radio, and I'm Jan Hall.
It is a somber story, one to you I now bequeath, of phantom visions, apparitions, and all that lies beneath. How few now told before me will a victim of you find. Oh, hear my tell and listen well, for might is in the mind.
Dum, dum,
a man dum, in university, dum, 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 only 22, dum, dum, would not believe dum, in ghosts and fiends, would not be found dum, a fool.
Diana.
But he who tempts dum, the trickster dum, will face dum, a fate dum, unkind. Dum, dum,
oh, hear my tale, listen well, for might is in the mind.
One night a young strong-headed man was sleeping in his bed, when a friend did come and took his gun, removed from it the lead.
Diana.
He stood all dressed in white and cried a ghostly chime, oh, hear my tale, listen well, for might is in the mind.
Diana.
A man awoke from slumber, took up his bedside gun, so you are, you've gone too far back down, my friend, be gone.
Diana.
But neither would surrender, both to their fates were blind.
Oh, hear my tale, listen well, for might is in the mind.
He tried to scare the trickster, but movement there was none. And at long last, when patience passed, it shot him with his gun.
Diana.
The trickster stood in silence, and neither bled nor died.
Oh, hear my tale, listen well, for might is in the mind.
Diana. A young man, he did tear his hair, his teeth did gnash and grind, fell to the floor, convulsed in awe, was rendered mute and blind.
Diana.
Believed the apparition and fell to his demise.
Oh, hear my tale, listen well, for might is in the mind.
That's Might Is in the Mind from Ange Hardy from her new album S2C. She is our special guest on Folk Roots Radio today. And the poetry reading at the start is by the wonderful David Milton. I imagine he's going to get a lot more requests to read poetry if he's not already doing this.
Yes. Well, it's not something he'd ever done before, but he really, really enjoyed it. And I'm excited because at the launch of the album, he's coming in his full town crier kit and he's going to ring the bell and call everyone in and read the poetry live. So, yeah, really excited about that.
So the album is just going to be released a couple of days after we're taping this interview today. And then you're off on a tour along the Coleridge Way. Do you want to tell us about that?
Yeah, so part of the Arts Council funding was that we were to tour the album in a two-part concert along the Coleridge Way in a venue at each village that it goes through. And it goes through 14 villages. A couple of the villages are so small that there isn't actually a venue. So we've had to slightly deviate from the track in two places, but it's pretty much along the Coleridge Way. And we'll be starting on the 3rd of October at Netherstowey, which is where Coleridge Cottage is, which is where he stayed and lived for a long time. And then we'll be walking parts of the Coleridge Way between gigs. The second one is at Halsey Manor, which is the folk epicentre of Somerset. It's a fabulous manor house with the second largest folk library in the UK. And that's where we're launching the album. We've got all kinds of things happening there, from the Watchet Town Choir, as I mentioned, to having a full band for that. We have a local arts group who are bringing an exhibition of work based on the Ancient Mariner, all sorts of things happening. And then we carry on through the Coleridge Way until we get to the end, which is on the coast at Linton Lynmouth on the 18th. But yeah, hopefully people will walk from place to place with me and just take some of the area in, or even come back and walk it at a later date. On the first night, they're going to keep Coleridge Cottage open so that people can come in and have a look around and get a real sense of where he lived. And then, yeah, like I say, I'm sure that people will hopefully walk along the way with me and come back and do it at other times as well. And if you do it, you get a certificate at the end to say that you've done it as well. So it's a nice thing. It's a great, beautiful walk, really inspiring. But it's also not unachievable for first-time walkers, you know. So it could be done in 3 days if you were kind of a seasoned walker, but it goes through one of my favourite places in the world, which is a place called Watersmeet, which is near the Lynmouth end. Watersmeet is where Kubla Khan was inspired, parts of it, before, and he was staying in Porlock. This is when the man from Porlock annoyed him and interrupted him in his thought process. And this place, Watersmeet, is so special to me. It's where I had my first date with my husband. And in August last year, before this was even a thing, I said to my husband, I'm getting really tired. I wish I could just go and sit at Watersmeet and write songs for a few days. And then before I knew it, the application had gone in. Turns out Watersmeet is on the Coleridge Way, and I was getting paid to go and sit at Watersmeet and write songs for a few days, which was wonderful.
Well, it's a wonderful story. And certainly, as I mentioned, I think at the start of this interview, you get this album, you listen to it, you enjoy the liner notes, because the nice thing, and what I love about an album like this, is that you get the lyrics, you get the poetry, and you get that little preamble from, you know, that you've written yourself to explain what you were trying to do. That, to me, really is part of the whole package when you're creating an album. And you have done it so, so well. I feel sure that when we get around to award season, this album definitely will be up there. It is absolutely fabulous. And certainly, I am definitely inspired that one day I need to do the Coleridge Way. I wanted to thank you for spending the time to talk to us today. I often, at the end of an interview like this, ask a question, though, well, what happens next? I imagine for the next couple of years, at least, you're going to be focused on sharing this album with people at festivals and obviously on tour. Do you have ideas about other projects you want to tackle? Because if I look back at your previous albums, and, you know, we haven't really had a chance to talk about that, but I know that the Lament of the Black Sheep, which came out in, I think, 2014, that was critically acclaimed. Your other albums were all very strong. What happens next in the career of Ange Hardy?
Well, the last three albums have been one a year. And I think it would be quite nice to keep that tradition going as long as I'm being prolific with my writing. So I do hope to bring out another album next year, but perhaps not one quite so big. What I might do is strip it back again and do something a little bit more generic, I don't know. But I have about 8 albums that have been kind of put together in concept, so I know what it is that I want to do. I'm just waiting for the wind to blow me in the certain direction I need to go in. So I've got lots of ideas, and I think when the time's right, I'll know which one it is I'm meant to be running with. So I don't want to sit here and say, well, I'm going to do my, one of my ideas was a folk and a flip side album. So you do a double EP, and one is traditional folk songs, and the second EP is the traditional folk songs rewritten from a different point of view of a different person in the story. So, and I'm really keen to do this album, I just don't know when. Things like The Trees They Grow High is from the daughter's point of view. It would be quite nice to do it from the father's point of view. And so that would be the flip side. Well, but yeah, there are lots of ideas.
You shouldn't share too many ideas, because they're all excellent. And I think I will look forward to hearing about them in the future. That certainly would be the case. It's been a great pleasure to talk to you today. If people want to learn more about your music, how should they do that?
All the normal things. Just Google Ange Hardy, A-N-G-E-H-A-R-D-Y. My web address is angehardy.com. My Twitter is @AngeHardyMusic. I do like tweeting. Come and find me. And Facebook as well. Find me on Facebook. I'm happy to make friends. And I like hearing from people. It's been the thing that's kept me going, is people telling me what they think and being able to communicate with people and be real. I think that's important.
You are definitely real, and I'm so pleased to have been able to make your acquaintance online. What I would like to do to finish is play another track from the album, but I want you to introduce it. You know what track we're going to play. I think it's the perfect way to finish this. But as I mentioned, it is a fabulous album. You need to hear this and listen to all 14 tracks. What are we going to play?
Oh, so this is was originally the last song on the album, although afterwards we added an elegy for Coleridge as a kind of bonus track. But this very much sums up the album. This is a nod to Coleridge and a thank you. The important words in this are that I hope that his words will rise through mine. It's important that through my writing, Coleridge becomes better known. And so this is the Coleridge way.
Absolutely fabulous. Ange Hardy, it's been an absolute pleasure for me to be able to talk to you today. Thanks again for spending the time. Ange Hardy with Along the Coleridge Way from the wonderful album STC. You're listening to Folk Roots Radio, and I'm Jan Hall.
All for you, sir. All for you, fine sir.